Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Junior's ready. Stand by.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Bullets and Bourbon. I'm joined here by my co-host Frank Gao, and today we've talked to many competitive shooters in the past, many giving their take on sponsorships. This discussion is going to be with a friend of mine, someone who works within the industry and on the competitive shooting side. But please welcome my friend Derek Dumont as he talks about influencers and sponsored shooters and what the industry looks for in individuals to represent their companies. Derek, can you quickly give a brief introduction about yourself?
Yep. Hey, I'm Derek, guys. I've been in the industry for 12 years now. I used to own a gun shop in Sarasota, Florida, and we basically went through and did custom work. We had CNC machines, so we started doing a lot with three-gun rifles, shotguns. So we really got heavy into the open division. So we started like modifying Vepers and kind of using a lot of the dissident arm parts and kind of modifying them for our local shooters around the central Florida, kind of Gulf Coast area, South Florida.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I remember first time we ever met, like you were one of the first people I ever saw running a Vepr shotgun, you know, at Blue Ridge. And I mean, I was like, holy shit, that's really cool. And we weren't on the same squad those first couple of years, but like we always reconnected.
Yep.
But so
yeah, anytime I saw you.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, anytime I saw you, you were always a great friend and everything. Between you and Wiseman, you guys were helping out in our own matches and just doing what you can to make the sport survive, you know. Yeah. So
and I mean that's what it really is. It's like, it's not just how can we make it survive, but how can we grow it? How can we bring more people into it? And it's like, I mean, Frank and I have this discussion all the time. Like we are seasoned competitors now, and what can we do now to keep the sport growing? And that's something that we're trying to do in our local area all the time. But you're a gunsmith. You shoot competitively. You work in marketing with multiple companies. Where did this path start, and did you ever see it evolving into where it is today?
So I'm machinist by trade, so that just kind of went through, and then certified welder. So guns were just easier than working on cars or airplanes for a living, so that's how I kind of got into that. And then one of the guys came into the shop, he said, have you ever tried three gun? And I said, no, we just used to go to the range on Saturday or Sunday and shoot at paper. And that's pretty much it. So he invited us out. We went and worked, we went and shot the first one with all the wrong gear. Had like a Uncle Mike's soft belt. My shirt, it was over my shirt. My shirt wasn't tucked in. I had a Beretta 92 that I shot. I had I borrowed my brother's Vepr 12 gauge shotgun, completely stocked, did not run. I bought birdshot from Walmart. And then I had a nice rifle, a Battle Arms rifle that I shot for the first time. And the guy thought it was funny at the local match there that I would go first, my very first match ever shooting any sort of action shooting at all. So they thought it'd be funny that I went first on the very first stage in the local match there. So they kind of threw me to the wolves, and I was like, man, this is awesome. I like this, and I'm going to keep doing it. And then one of the guys that had been shooting for a while, I'll name him. His name is Colby. He's from Florida. He's Ray Churnside's buddy.
Okay.
And And he came up to me. He's like, "Oh, you're never gonna get that shotgun to run. Open shotguns never run." So I took that as a challenge and learned it inside and out of how the shotguns worked and timing and gas and everything about them, and just kind of made that my other challenge of making that thing work. You know, I wanted to get better at the sport, and I wanted to use a box magazine shotgun. And in Florida, we have a lot of problems with magazines getting too hot, sitting in the sun and stuff. So my goal was to make them work in any condition. And that's what we did. I didn't want to bring a cooler and put my mags and ammo in a cooler as like all the old guys used to do. So that's kind of where I started in that. And I've always kind of played around with photo editing. I've owned my own business for like 25 years. So I got into doing my own website, doing photos, doing pictures, videos, editing, and then kind of went from there. And kind of always knew that, and kind of was like a hobby for me for most of it. I would just use it for my job itself, though, too. It was just marketing my own business that I own. So then I got into doing social media and stuff. So when Instagram came on, the App Store and all that stuff, I downloaded Instagram and started just editing videos for that. And it was just fun hobby. I didn't think anything would come of it. And then a company reached out, CMC Triggers reached out and said, "Oh, we love your content and stuff and competition shooter. Can we send you some triggers?" And that's kind of how it started from there. And then just kind of snowballed into other companies, talking and going that way.
No, I mean, it's a pretty cool evolution, like from start to finish, especially like humble beginnings, not knowing anything to where you are now. It's just it's interesting. Like the type of person I am, like I like to know about the people behind stuff rather than like if you read a book about a war. A battle. I don't like that stuff is interesting, but I don't care about that stuff. I care about the people behind the stories. So I just find people interesting, and it's really interesting to see the evolution of a person from where they started to where they got to. So as someone who is very familiar technically with firearms from both your gunsmithing background and can understand the requirements from competitions, do you ever advise from a do you have ever advise from a marketing perspective on design and function, like to the companies you work with?
Yeah, I do a lot of research and development with my machinist and gunsmithing background. I get a lot of phone calls throughout the week asking about design features and what should, the end goal be in that design, and just kind of work them through that process. I do a lot of testing on optics and stuff too. So for companies, a lot of that doesn't go on video because a lot of them are prototypes. But if I can break it, then it's probably not good enough. So, and I just do normal shooting. I don't try to throw them on the ground. I don't do anything crazy. Like, might, if it's a pistol mounted optic, I might set it on its side like this and just let it fall over. Just normal use and wear and tear, that kind of thing. And then I've also made some type of apparatuses to be able to test certain things. Like I have a G-force meter that I can actually mount onto the gun, onto the slide if it's a slide ride, or actually onto the frame too, to see what kind of force and yaw and angle and what's happening to it on more of a scientific basis versus just going, "Okay, I can shoot this gun and the red dot survived that." But I want to see more than that. I want to actually know some data from it. Like, okay, with plus B ammo, what does it do versus 147 grain match ammo? And can it hold up that way? And how many cycles and that type of thing? But I actually made one that would fire the gun for me, almost like a ransom rest. but it would hold the gun straight. So instead of a ransom rest, and you know, it comes up and allows it to stop once it's done, you know, how much force it's pushed back from. Well, this one actually holds it straight. So if you're going to grip the gun really, really strong and you're trying to hold that muzzle down, it's going to mimic that. So it just shoots it like that. And I tried to use as much biology I could in like wrist strength and tendons and stuff like that to make that for a company. I can't tell you who that company I made it for is, but.
No, that's really cool. No. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just interesting. I like tinkering and building things. So that's where it kind of came from, but just for fun again. So.
So competition in many ways makes up a very small part of the firearms industry. What's the importance of having sponsored shooters running your equipment and at matches? And is it a matter of getting the name out there? Is it for R&D? And then what difference does a sponsored shooter actually play in the grand scheme of things? I know there was a lot of questions there, so.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see. I'm going to start with. I'm going to go ahead and just say, okay. Competition shooters are great in the way that they represent the brand. You know, they might not have a big following. They might not have a great social media presence or anything like that. And that doesn't really matter. We want to have somebody that can talk, that can explain the product to other people that might be potential buyers, or just getting the name out there. Competition shooters, I'd rather have them go to a lot of local matches, because those are the up and coming people that are trying to get into gear. They're trying to learn from the pro guys, or even like just the good local shooters themselves. So like, doesn't really matter to me. On the marketing standpoint, on the competition side, like, I don't want you to go to a lot of major matches, because that doesn't really do anything for me as a company, representing a company. I'd rather have the guys getting into it, wanting to learn about new gear and transferring into that, you know, starting out with a Staccato and they want to move up to a Phoenix Trinity firearm, or, you know, something a little bit higher level like that. Major matches, you don't have these guys looking to upgrade. You might have a couple here and there, because you got a lot of these local guys that are jumping in and going right from a local to a major. So that is good too, but I'd rather you be on the range at a local match being able to show that gear versus being at a major where most of the guys that are probably sponsored or already have all their gear figured out. So,
well, no, that totally makes sense, just because the people at your local should know who you are, and they should know the type of person you are. And if you're a good representative of the brand, you're going to get a following through them, to where they're going to ask the questions. They're going to ask to try it out. And as somebody who's representing you should be the guy saying, "Hey, run my stuff. If their stuff goes down here, run my gun." I mean,
yeah.
Shoot that.
Yeah,
that happened. Yes, 2 days ago. One of the guys we know, he and you know him, Dono Beer.
Oh yeah.
he showed up to our match, and like typically at Quantico Shooting Club, you know, the rifle shots aren't past 200 yards. And typically we don't open the Iron Man range, which is where we do all the long range stuff. It's usually just sectioned off to a bay match, but you know, me and Alex Go King and Frank, we all kind of, I was like, "Hey, I want to do long range. Like, this needs to happen." And Don didn't realize that we were going to be shooting long range, and so he shows up with the PCC to run that as the rifle, because we're following PCSL rules. And he's like, "Fuck, man, I don't got a rifle." I was like, "Here you go, man. Run my rifle. Have fun."
Frickin' Don.
Yep. Nicest guy in the world.
Oh yeah.
Peaches. That's what I'm gonna start
Oh
calling him.
yeah. Peaches is pretty good.
So what about on the R&D side? Do you guys have your have sponsored shooters R&D stuff for you? And then what kind of data do you collect?
So on the side of Phoenix Trinity, we try not to let anything go out that isn't already figured out. We might do like some grip angle, different stuff like that. But on the gun side of thing, I try not to let anything go out to a sponsored shooter because I don't want them to go to a match and have something bad happen or anything like that. I'd rather, you know, if I'm gonna do an R&D with one of the team members, it's gonna be just a testing basis and that's it. So like Dylan Easley, he's one of the main guys that we send it to just because for whatever reason he's got a million MBX magazines and he's got cases and cases of ammo to go through. So
I've never seen a man with more MBX magazines in my life. I mean,
yeah,
just
me neither.
magazines in general. I think he opened his case and I saw like 30 plus magazines in there. I was like,
Oh yeah.
that's a healthy collection. I hit him up this week. I was like, hey, I need to buy an MBX magazine. I was like, I only have like this many. He's like, that's it. He's like, you need to step up your game, bro. I was like,
Yeah.
sorry, man. Give me your code. Let
Yeah.
me get that code.
That's pretty impressive.
So what is it that you look for when bringing somebody onto a company, and how do you advise your employees about the benefit of that relationship?
So, are we talking sponsored shooters, like
Yep.
bringing a sponsored shooter in or bringing
Yeah, sponsored
the
shooters.
sponsored shooter? Okay.
Yeah.
So, bringing a sponsored shooter in, try to vet them as best as possible. Obviously, if you can talk good in front of a camera, that's always a plus. Because if we do, you know, marketing standpoint on my side, like I want to help the sponsored shooter reach people also. So I don't want it just to be a one-sided relationship. You're a sponsored shooter, you get product, and that's it. Like we're working together. We're trying to make both relationships grow, even if it's not a social media type thing. But if I can get some press and some magazines for you or anything like that, you know, do any sort of advertising in a magazine, I can use one of the competition shooters. I'm going to try to do that and hopefully, you know, have more eyes on them as a professional or as a, you know, just a shooter that wants to go to the local range and have fun and show people the gun. So right now I have a guy that actually purchased a H Pro, which is our newer, just kind of like all around, not duty gun, but it will do good in competition. It will do good in just, and we have guys that carry them. He bought one, loves it so much, messages me on Instagram all the time. He's like shipping his own personal gun to other people because he loves it so much. He wants to show it to his friends. So he texted me today and said that he was going to ship it to Texas, for a couple guys that are good competition shooters that he was talking to. They like the gun. They've never felt one before, so they want to do it. So he's shipping his own firearm to just show people. Like I love that relationship because they're excited about a product, they love it, and they want to share it with everyone else. So, and that's kind of the same way I true like treat the competition guys, because if they're excited about it, I can make keep them happy, at least as much as I possibly can, and then help them with photos and video editing and stuff like that. So I have a lot of guys that just don't know how to video edit very well. So they'll send me clips, I'll edit it for them, and then that's just a relationship that we try to keep together that if I can help them on their own stuff, it's going to help me in the long run. So
Yeah, I need to get with you sometime to just to learn some more skills.
yeah.
I mean, I think I'm doing pretty good for myself, but there's always more to be learned.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all the apps and stuff that they Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
No, go
good,
on.
Frank. Do you want to talk about some of the tools that you've come around to using, just in terms of creating a production value for social media and some of the things that you've used to like put together campaigns?
I could do that. So I have my trusty camera. So this is a Sony A7 III. It's good for pictures and videos. It does 4K and everything. That right there alone makes the production value go up a lot. And then I use DaVinci Resolve. I use Adobe Premiere. I use Logic for sound design and stuff. A lot of stuff. It just I would love to make longer videos, but for social media content, it's like 8 to 10 seconds really is where you can keep their attention span. YouTube is great for doing the longer videos. It's just hard sometimes to create a kind of like a movie sequence or cinematic video that makes sense for what we're trying to market, you know? So a lot of that is just like quick clips is usually what does the most for us on
About
a return on that video.
10 to 20 minutes is a sweet spot for the longer videos I've found, if you can
Yes.
maintain
Yeah,
that
YouTube.
attention.
Yeah, that doesn't really it doesn't really do anything on Instagram though, because I've noticed
No.
so I like long form content. I like to listen to stuff as I'm reloading, as I'm dry firing. And what I found is that Instagram one doesn't cater to that, but also its video player is that's another way, like the format itself, the way you interface with longer form videos just doesn't work, right? Whereas YouTube
Yeah.
has, you have all these different ways, like you can speed up, you can slow it down. The scrubbing is like really precise. It's been really interesting listening to you talk about, bringing in sponsored shooters and really like increasing the outreach of the product. And what stood out to me is you said that it's more important for these shooters to go out to local matches. So are you like thinking about the continental United States as kind of a map and trying to like put sponsored shooters in specific regions to therefore like increase your outreach as a brand?
Yes, for sure. That is always been my goal, even helping like so when I first got sponsored by CMC Triggers, they asked me to help with some content and stuff. They loved it so much, and then they asked me to kind of jump on board and kind of advise them on some of the three gun stuff because I dove in head first. So like I lived and breathed it. Like that was it. There was no other life to it. I mean, like that was pretty much it. And so they asked me to like kind of help their reach. And I said, well, where are your sponsored shooters? And they were all in Texas. I was the only one that was outside of Texas besides Chris Weissman. He's in North Carolina. So that's pretty much it. I said, well, first off, I know you guys are in Texas, but that's not reaching anywhere else in the United States that people might want to buy your triggers. So they took that advice and they went through and they asked me like what sponsored shooters and what regions do I think would be a good fit for the company, and gave them some and they loved it, and it worked really well for them because they had people in that area that if they were at a local match or something, oh, have you tried this CMC trigger? They just came out with a 2.5 pound, you know, and then just put it in people's hands and let them shoot it and kind of go from there. I mean, it's definitely a working relationship with these companies. It's not just, hey, I'm a sponsored shooter, give me free stuff. And that's what a lot of people think it is. I mean, you
Yes.
have to put in your time and work into that. So,
I look at it as it's almost like I don't want to say it's a full-time job, but it's a second job. If it's not feeling like a second job, you are not doing your job, in representing that company.
100%.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like it. We've talked about sponsored shooters, but the internet is also full of, I'm gonna try not to gag when I say this word, influencers. That's a
Yeah,
new, it's a
well,
new hotness, and
yeah.
it's a buzzword that's received a lot of detractors, I think, for some good reasons. It's a new like cultural paradigm in a lot of ways. Are there things that influencers bring to the table that competitive shooters don't necessarily?
Reach. Reach
Okay.
is 100%. That's all an influencer is reaching a different market, especially in the gun space. Because we're limited. We're limited on what we can do. It's not like, they're influencers for makeup or cars or tires or anything like that. That's the biggest problem, is we're trying to, everyone's on their phone. When you go to the bathroom, you're on your phone. When you wake up in the morning, you check your phone. Yeah, like you live on your phone. So, and where, Frank, where do you, I mean, you're on Instagram probably throughout the day, here and there, you check every once in a while throughout the day. So,
Absolutely.
that's where the influencers come into it. The problem with influencers is that now you can buy your likes, your views, you can buy all that stuff. So, and it's one of those things where you can really get into trouble with people. So there's a few influencers out there that buy the stuff. So that's, it's almost like you're lying to the company to try to get money out of them or product. There's a lot of influencers that just get money for videos. So you're paying this person however much money, $2,500 a month to do two videos or three videos or four videos or whatever it is, whatever their rate is, but you're not seeing any ROI on it. And return on investment is key, because $2,500 a month for one influencer to reach a market. And the biggest problem with influencers, especially in the gun world, is we can't track if that actually did anything. So we can't track if it actually sold guns or sold triggers or sold safeties or anything like that. We have no idea how to track that. And there's some software out there that I use. I use something called Social Blade, and it's mainly, I use it for YouTube. And I can see every single YouTube channel and all your metrics and analytics. So I can go to whoever's YouTube page, say Matt's got a YouTube page, it's Matt Gunlock's gun page or whatever. I don't know what's your actual YouTube page. Do you have a personal?
It's the podcast page.
Well, yeah, it was a personal page that turned into a podcast page, but it's Bullets and Bourbon Podcast.
So I could type in Social Blade, and I could type in the name of whatever channel I want to look at, Demolition Ranch, any of the competition shooters page, and see their metrics in graph form. I can zoom in on it. I can look at everything, likes, all that kind of stuff. And we ran into a influencer that, before I got the job with Phoenix Trinity, was already kind of placed
Working.
into that space with them, or sponsorship, or whatever you want to call it. And as soon as I got the job, I vetted him. I started looking at all of his stuff, and I saw right away that he's just buying all of the likes, all of the comments, all of the followers, subscribers on YouTube, all of that, all the views on his page. He was buying that. I mean, he must have been paying, like, per video, $300 to $500 to make it look like he had a bigger page. The reason behind that is, when Instagram first came up, if you had a lot of followers, they didn't limit gun content at all. So you have people like Jen, Gun Girl Jen. She's my fiance. Back then, she was one of the only three gunners girls out there that would go to all the major matches. And just being a girl in a man specific kind of area, like race car drivers and that kind of stuff, it's like, it's dominated by men. So when you get a girl in there, you know how that goes. You get a lot of attention because you're one of the 10 girls at the whole match out of 300 people. So back then, you could get a lot of followers very quickly because you were a girl playing with guns, shooting guns, doing any of that content, and they could gain that following very fast. Well, guys had a harder time because there's a million guys that love guns. There's not a million women that love guns. So it kind of was one of those things where, like, Jen's got 90,000 followers on Instagram, a lot on Facebook and stuff like that, where He actually has those followers there. And you can tell when you go to look at pages and stuff like that, the way that you can look at views, you can look at comments, and you can look at likes. So when this guy, I started vetting him, I'm looking at his Instagram page and I'm looking at it and I'm like, how does he have 26,000 likes, but he's got 1,300 views on the video? It doesn't really make much sense. Like, he wasn't even trying to hide it, that he was buying it. He just was basically buying it and thought that nobody could see it, I guess. And then I find out from other companies that I've dealt with, the ammo company in general, that he blackmailed them, and he basically made his presence look like it was a lot bigger than what it was. So then he would have 100,000 followers on Instagram and then contact these companies like, oh man, I love your stuff, be like, and try to work this into the messaging. And then they're like, then they look at his page and see he's got that many followers. So then they want to start sending him stuff because they think he's going to do videos, that kind of thing. So that is like ruining influencers on that side, because in all aspects and all markets, there are influencers that do this. Same exact thing. They try to make their presence look so big, and then they get what they need out of it, but there's no actual rate or return on investment, because all those followers are fake. No actual buying customers, no customers that are going to see it, and you're not getting any even advertising. If you just want to get your product out there on the internet, you're not even getting that out there. You're giving people stuff and you're not getting anything in return out of it.
I got a
And he's
quick question
blackmailed. Yeah, go ahead.
on that. Like Instagram, you can boost your post. Is that essentially the same thing as buying views, buying like
No.
no.
No, boosting the post is just making it be seen more on Instagram. You're paying just like on Facebook, but you can't do it in the gun space because they won't allow it. Sometimes they let it happen for a little bit, and then a bot will find it and be like, oh no, that's advertising gun parts. You can't do that. So it's one of those things where these are other websites that you can buy likes, followers, that kind of thing. And a lot of people don't understand it when they go to buy them, that they fall off very quickly. They use a computer program to create fake accounts, and those fake accounts from this company will like, they can tell, okay, I need 100,000 likes on this post. Well, all their fake accounts will like that post. And you can usually tell broken English on the comments, just comments that don't make any sense. You know, like it's a video about a gun, and then there's a comment on there saying, oh, I love the way your lips look in this video, or some random thing that doesn't even make sense at all. Like, why would that even be a comment? And you know, it's like, oh, me so horny or something. Like, I don't know. Like, and sometimes, oh, you know, and you can even now, I mean, they're getting so smart that you can even type in with AI, you can even type in like generalize, like, hey, what do you want your comment to kind of fall under? And you can type in like certain things, like, okay, if I know I have a double star rifle, and so, oh, that double, you can type in under AI and they'll generate AI comments for each one of those profiles that comment on you. And they'll say like, oh, that double star rifle looks like it's shooting so flat, but it will still be broken English and it won't really make much sense to the video. But you can at least like kind of direct it in that way, which before you couldn't do that. You would just pay for comments and it would be just random comments on there. So this influencer in particular, which I won't even call him an influencer because he's really not, he just paid for everything and kind of made it seem like his page was big, has done this to multiple companies. He's blackmailed, he's extorted. It's really funny. I actually got a message the other day about a girl that he did the same thing to. She sold her house to move in with him. He was still had a wife. He spent all the money. Text message, she gave me all sorts of proof. It's insane. So
Wow.
a lot of this stuff, like, I've been trying to figure out a way to handle it. And so basically, I mean, he's lying to everyone, saying that he's got a bigger influence than he really does. So at that point, I mean, he's not being honest. There's definitely he's breaking laws in that at the same time, because you if you're telling me something and we get into a business agreement and everything that you told me is not true, then how are we responsible for paying you for that? We're not at that point. So corporate lawyers, they can handle it. They can go down their rabbit holes, and they have a lot of cybersecurity PIs now out there that can go through and legally hack into things. I will say, but
Well,
we
the
found so
interesting
much
thing
dirt.
about the interesting thing about that person is whenever they tried, like, whenever he tried going, like, bringing negative exposure to you, he decided to bring negative exposure to everybody else within his own community and people that vouched for him too.
Yeah, and that's one of the things. I mean, like, this guy, the way he's doing it, basically at this point he's throwing a hissy fit because he's not getting what he wants. And we will not, as a company, as a marketing, like, I have to be kind of a PR. Marketing is kind of it's goes hand in hand with PR. If you don't have a PR person, you're the marketing person is your PR person. So when I think to it, like, does a company want to stoop down to that level and have an internet fight with a person? Especially a person with one, maybe 1% of the actual following they supposedly have. No, I don't want to have a fight with this person, because all I am is making it a relevant subject to talk about this person. And I don't want to give him any press at all. He can have his fake YouTube videos, he can have his fake Instagram profiles. Actually, because I called him out on his fake Instagram, he deleted his Instagram and started a new one because it was so screwed up from all of his buying, likes and follows and all that stuff, that it didn't even look real anymore. And I must have showed him that it didn't look real, because then he deleted it. So, the main thing with it, though, is, like, as a company, how do you behave? There's two trains of thought. You could be the, like, HK social media girl from back in the day that used to just roast everyone, or like the Wendy's Twitter girl to, like, the funniest Twitter page ever, and so you can either roast people and just be like, hey, my shit doesn't stink, and this is the way we're gonna conduct our business. Or you can just be a good company and handle it like adults and not stoop down to the level of all these internet trolls out there. And that's kind of like the take that I like to do, just because I'm not going to give in to it, and I'm not going to give you what you want. I don't want to give this guy any unwanted attention. Like, I don't want him to have any attention at all, because he's ripping companies off left and right. And I don't think it's a right thing, because then it taints that market for everyone that's trying to do it the right way. I'd rather work with somebody that's got 5,000 followers on Instagram, that's hungry to grow their page, versus somebody that has 100,000 that does, like, a quick video that doesn't do anything.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And this entire discussion's been really illuminating. Shouldn't be surprising to us all that people lie on the internet, but yet here we
Yeah.
are. Speaking of influencers, so you mentioned that, the those are important to company growth because of their reach. Now, do you, but on the other side, your sponsored shooters, they are somewhat regional, like you said, and you expect them to be able to articulate some of the finer technical points of your product and be able to not necessarily sell, but to explain the product and to also potentially troubleshoot the product if something goes wrong. Do you see a point in influencers having a level of technical knowledge? Is that required of them, or is it simply just to broadcast, just broadcast the product and reach more of their followers?
So I like to break it down into review, like GunTuber reviews. If we need to get a review out there, that's, like, the best way to do it, with a YouTube channel that has, 100,000 real followers, and they're a technical guy. They break it down in a standpoint, and is it a guy that caters to our market? That's the other thing. Like, some of these companies will just throw, like, these Chinese optic companies you see coming out all the time. You see them just throw optics at anybody that's willing to take them just to get them out there. There's like the Olight scandal back in the day, like, oh, they made a really bright flashlight that caught on fire. So, I mean, that's kind of a problem, like, that's actually a big problem. So, I mean, you'll have these. I don't. If you have a $5,000 gun, you're not going to give it to a guy that mainly does Glocks. You're going to give it to somebody that does a lot of high-end 2011s, that plays with staccatos, that does reviews and breaking down the way it shoots, the way it tears down, like how it operates, that kind of thing. So I look at that in a review standpoint. Yes, reviews are good, but is that going to reach everyone I need it to reach on that? And then also another standpoint on review guys. So, like, if I send a gun to a YouTube, like, review channel, they'll be able to also take into consideration, okay, if somebody wants to learn about this gun, first thing you're going to do is you're going to Google it. And you're probably going to come across a YouTube video of the gun, somewhere, like, somebody has a gun. If you can't learn it on YouTube, I'm sure you can't learn it at all at that point. So, I mean, like, there's a 6-year-old that can teach you how to weld. There's, all just random videos on there all the time. But it really boils down to, like, what am I trying to reach at this moment? Being Phoenix Trinity, we're not a huge company. We don't have a huge marketing budget. I don't even have a marketing budget. I just kind of like, hey, I want to do this. Can I get the okay, yes or no? And then kind of go from there. And I try to show what we're going to get out of that, with this person that we're going to send a gun to, or we're going to sponsor, or vice versa. But there's also a lot of YouTube guys that just do fun, awesome videos of them shooting the guns. They're not reviews, they're just like an overview of the product. And that's a great way to get it out there too. YouTube, I try to stay with reviews on YouTube just because that seems to be the most common content, and that's where, like, a lot of people go to YouTube for, is like gun reviews, learning how to do something on the gun. So when we first came out with the Hero Grips, I sent one to a guy in Chicago, the gunsmith at a gun shop up there. I actually got introduced to him by the rapper Twista, which is his gunsmith. So that was kind of cool, like, meeting him that way. I sent him a grip, and he did a install video, but he broke it down. I mean, it's like an hour long, but if you want to learn about 2011s, this guy will teach you every little in and out of the 2011 and what to look for in setting your pre-travel and your trigger stop and post-travel, like, everything. He goes through every little bit of the gun, in installing this grip, taking a plastic grip off and putting an aluminum grip on it, which is great. So I have a lot of people that, like, hey, I want to try to put this grip on my gun, but I'm not 100% sure on how to do that. So first off, I send him that YouTube video, and I usually, an hour later, or an hour and a half later, I'll get a message back. That video is so awesome. I learned so much about these guns. Like, so something like that. He has like 100 subscribers on YouTube. Not a big channel, but I broke down what I wanted out of that video, and he did it. That was worth giving a free grip, a $525 grip to that guy. Just something along those lines. I mean, it does leaps and bounds for me on the marketing side, because if somebody has a question on Instagram or Facebook or YouTube, I can always put that. So I look at it in a bigger picture. Like, you don't have to get a lot of following out of it, but if you can articulate well and you actually know what you're talking about, I'd rather get that because that's going to help me in the future being able to just send people to that YouTube video to learn about their gun, learn how to put the grip on. Like me personally, as a company, for me, it's a big legal no-no for me to make a video as the company on how to put this grip on your gun. Because if they do something wrong and the gun has a problem, somebody gets hurt, now who's liable at that point? Where a guy that's just making a YouTube video that has no affiliation with the company can do that, and there's no legal ramifications from it.
Yeah, that absolutely
So.
makes sense. And yeah, I think a lot of us, when we first started getting into firearms, we were raised on those kinds of videos, like the long form, like preferably well lit videos showing us how to take apart a 1911 clean and all that stuff. So that's definitely the part of YouTube that I frequent the most. We have like hybrid influencers and competitive shooters. I'd say like Becky Yackley and JJ Rakaza are kind of bridging that gap there. Is it worth your guys' time as a smaller company trying to bring on someone like that? Or is that purely in the purview of some of these larger corporations?
So a lot of the times with competition shooters, how I vet them, whether they're on a larger scale or a smaller scale of influence or followings and stuff, is I try to look at their past year. So I look at their past year of content they made. Are they switching companies often, frequently? Is there no loyalty to the company? That, especially being a smaller company, I need loyal people that want to grow with the company. I don't necessarily want a competition shooter that's gonna be, oh, well, I'm doing this for 6 months and then, okay, I'm gonna go to another company that, and then you guys are gone. And it seems like there's a lot of them that are bridging the gap of competition shooters slash influencers that are kind of jumping ship a lot. And that's not a way that I wanna deal with that. I don't wanna have somebody, get a gun from us, shoot it for a couple months, and then go to another company or try to get, it's just like it's like a snatch and grab. They're just trying to get a valuable piece that they can either sell later or they want to keep it in their collection, and that's what they're willing to do. I just went through this actually with a competition shooter that was on the team, junior shooter. He was also brought on before I joined as marketing for Phoenix Trinity, and he was promised the gun by somebody else that's no longer with the company, in a time frame that was unrealistic for a custom built gun. Got a little antsy. I mean, could have it been handled differently? Yes. Before I got there, enjoying the company, but basically I made them promise to, okay, hey, I got a gun, I can send it to you, it's going to be your gun, you can shoot it, no problem at all, you're doing great. A month and a half later he quit the team, so no warning. Been friends with him for a couple years now. Love the kid to death, but just ended up, he literally, him and his parents both promised to me that he was not going to quit the team. I said, if I give you this gun, you're not going to quit the team, right? Because like you finally got the gun. I've given you parts throughout the time I've joined the company. I've given you stuff that you've needed. I had him come over and shoot a bunch of content with me. Did very good. I vouched for him with the owners of the company. So it hurt. It hurt me because like they promised me that it wasn't gonna be that way. Everything was gonna be good. As soon as they got the gun, I'd never got any content with the gun, never got anything from that on a ROI standpoint, and quit the team. So it was like he was just waiting for that gun to get there to quit the team so he could either sell it, get into another platform, whatever he wants to do. And the way that the it was an email, and the way that it was done was very vague. You know, like, oh, who are you going to? You know, they couldn't tell me anything. They just wanted to keep their options open, which, I mean, it's fine, but they could have done it a different way. They could have called me before they sent an email to the owner saying they were quitting a team, talking to me, because I have a lot. I had a at that time I had a lot more leeway. I talked the owners into allowing to do a little bit more with the company. So with sponsorships, being able to bring all these guys in and do like a full content day with all new products and everything, and really utilize the team members a little bit more. So, I mean, my credibility was here with the owners. I vouched for this kid, and then now it's in the doghouse. So all the other team members now are going to suffer because of that, which sucks. But it's just the way it goes. You know, you get these people. Content shooters are usually not the greatest for companies because they just want a lot of stuff and they don't want to do a lot in return. So that kind of it was defeating for me in that standpoint, just because they promised. You know, I've known them for years. They promised that that wasn't going to happen, and then just did it right after that. So.
Yeah, that's a rough situation. And so yeah, sorry you had to go through that, because you definitely stuck your neck out. It's your job, and at the end of the day, I understand, like, from the other side, from the influencer and the competitive shooter standpoint, they are mostly concerned about themselves. They are not a part of the company where they have to worry about the ownership, they have to worry about coworkers, and everyone's got to get paid, right? Everyone has to pull in a salary at the end of the day, and they are depending on that for their livelihood. In this case, I mean, it sounds like you guys cut your losses fairly. I mean, the losses were kind of cut, because when the shooter quit the team. But have you ever, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced instances in which an influencer or a competitive shooter turns out to be bad for business. And how do you handle that when you see the potential for an individual that you have stuck your neck out for, affiliated with, potentially might lose the company some money? How do you deal with a situation like that?
It's very hard, because you get to know these people on a personal standpoint. Like, you learn about their whole lives. You know, you talk to them and you become friends with these people. And then for them to turn around and do something that can hurt the company, especially the company that I work for, it's kind of defeating in a way, just because it makes you not want to work with anybody in that realm again. You know, you don't want to have to put your neck out there. You don't want to do things and go out of your way for these people. And that's why that's why I said that, you know, the rest of the team's going to suffer because of this one person being greedy and wanting more. You know, it could have been as easy as a phone call. Like, hey, having some concerns, like this isn't really going the way I wanted to. That would have been better than sending an email that was very vague and doing something. Like, if we're friends, we should be able to talk.
Well, I
And I
look
was
at it
friends
at
before I took this job, so.
I look at it as the adult thing to do is talk it through. Like, if it's a very important decision that needs to be made, it should not be communicated through email. Yes, have an email there as, a paper trail per se, but talk to them like an adult. Like, it's as simple as that.
And honestly, we want everyone to do great in their life. Like, there's nothing that I would love more than to see somebody doing great and having fun. Like, that alone, like, the main reason I go to three gun matches is because I love to see people having fun and like hitting a target that they may not have think they could have hit, you know, a 700-yard target with a 223. Like, That's awesome when they hit that target, like Battle for the South, or no, I'm sorry, Fall Brawl. We were there, and like Christy Connor Tate, Lori Blackwell, we had Pat there, and we had a lot of the ladies were on our squad, and there was a lot of older ladies that were there that were just struggling with long range. So I worked with a couple of them trying to get their holds correct and all that with stray lock and some data on the rifles. And then the next day they were hitting all the long range targets. They were screaming at the end of their stage, like just having a great time. So same thing with team members. Like that's what I want to see. I want to see you guys do good. I want to see the influencers do good. I want to see everybody have a good time and enjoy their life. So with this situation, if that's this person would have came to me and said, "Hey, I got an opportunity from Glock or whoever to really like get my name out there," there were no hard feelings. Like there would have been nothing wrong with that at all. But instead, they just were very vague and took the gun and knew exactly what they were doing. So that's what kind of, and it's like maybe they didn't know what they were doing. I can't speak for them 100%, but at the same time, if you just had a conversation a month ago with the person before you got your gun, it's the $5,500 gun, and you promised them that you weren't going to quit the team, please don't quit the team. I like asked multiple times, like, please, whatever you do, like I'm sticking my neck out for you, don't do it. And then you do it anyways a month later. Are you really a friend in the end? Like, and
Like
it's one of those things, like,
you should feel gutted. Like it should be
oh
a
yeah.
hard phone call. Like it
Yeah.
should be it you should feel uncomfortable because at the same time, if you really cared, you would be very nervous about the decision and you would want to kind of see all angles of what that decision's going to carry out in the long run.
Yeah, so that was hard to deal with just because it was, you want to see people do good, and then they take advantage of you in that situation and go from there. I mean, and it's not like I'm never going to talk to the people again or anything like that. Like, but I don't know. It's not the same, especially when you sit there and you promise that you're not going to do something, you do it anyways. If they had problems, they should have contacted me if we're friends. That's end of the story right there. So
That makes sense. The sense of trust in that relationship's been irrevocably breached. Like that's just not something that you can get back right away. So yeah, that really sucks all around. The last question I wanted to ask you, Derek, is so we've talked about social media, but I don't think we've quite touched on the fact that a lot of gun-related, competitive shooting-related content is seeing censorship. YouTube is demonetizing things. Instagram is limiting the reach of certain posts to beyond like the fo like it can't get beyond the follower pool, right? So we were experiencing it on our podcast side. I'm sure you have seen you deal with it. It's your livelihood. So what do you think is the best way to still facilitate outreach and get out to people despite all these roadblocks?
It gets difficult. Basically, every time Instagram does an update on their terms of service change and what you can and can't post change and what they deem as bad changes. So it's a constant battle. I mean, you basically have to keep up with it. There's certain things you can do. I mean, honestly, watching a lot of YouTube videos from other people that like take the algorithm and try to break it down into layman's terms for people, that's been a great help on certain things. It doesn't really translate. Like, so a lot of influencers will have a rate card, so they'll send you a rate card. One post costs this much money. Well, on a normal, they take your average, They'll do your followers by your average of reach. And so if you have a lot of followers, you might not create good content. So you might not get a lot of reach because people don't want to watch it. And there's a lot of people that say they're shadow banned. They aren't shadow banned. They just aren't creating stuff that people want to watch. So that, and that's one of the things that you gotta like, okay, there's something wrong if you're trying different things and nothing's, you're not seeing anything work. So that's what I recommend for a lot of people that are trying to grow their pages and stuff is try different things. Like there's a niche that you're gonna hit, whether it's comedy with guns, whether it's like reviewing guns, it's really, really technical videos with guns. Something is gonna hit and try different like lengths of videos at the same time. YouTube right now, they're trying to be TikTok, so they're pushing shorts, which are basically like Instagram is doing the same thing, 8 to 10 seconds, captions on your video. It could be just a video of Frank right there, just looking off into the distance, and then it'll write like, hey, you guys should check out my podcast. It's Bourbon and Bullets, or Bullets and Bourbon, or whatever. So it's more like, I mean, and that's where it becomes a job for people. If they can't just take out their phone and do like a quick selfie video of something, that's where it starts to get harder for people. And that's the algorithm for Instagram right now is really looking at, all right, are you editing in the Instagram app? Okay, no. Well, they're going to push more people that they can actually track if you're editing the video that you posted in the app and cutting it up that way versus editing in a third-party software and doing it that way. So
That
that can
sucks.
create,
That's annoying.
yeah, it does
Like,
suck.
I mean, I think Frank, you probably edit in the app. I do not. I use Premiere Pro. I use all these other third party softwares whenever I want to do stuff just because I find it easier and it's a lot more professional. With that type of stuff. And so I get what they're trying to do, but at the same time, it's just it's annoying.
Yeah, and then the music, picking the music from Instagram is a huge thing. So if you edit in a third party app and you add your music into there and then you chop it up so it matches your video and all that kind of stuff, you won't get as much reach as you would if you just picked a song off of the Instagram music
But
and go from there because they're trying to.
it's so limited what they have. Like,
So, and that kind of is a painful thing for me too, because on my personal page, which is Three Gunsmith, and then the Phoenix Trinity page is a business page. So the business page, you can't use any copyrighted music at all. On your
I see.
personal page, you can use copyrighted music. So then that becomes a big problem because now you can't find anything that it's just like a bunch of generic songs that some guy in his basement makes, you know? So it's like, it's pretty hard, you know, to find something that makes sense for that. So a lot of the times what I'll do is I will screen record. If I'm making a quick short Instagram video, I will screen record that audio and whatever that audio bite size is, and I'll cut it so it matches perfectly. Edit my video to, do a transition on a beat or on a snare drum or something like that, or a yell or whatever. And then I'll import, then I'll post that video to, or I'll put it in Instagram, and then I'll pick that audio and put it over it. And then I might have to move it around a little bit here and there to make it match up perfectly, but that it's just a pain in the butt. It's like, why do I want to do that? Like, why can't I use a third party app to do it? And you get advertisements for third party apps on Instagram all the time. They're advertising through Instagram. They should allow that to happen, but Instagram doesn't see it that way. So.
Yeah, we definitely feel I mean, I'll use I use the onboard video editor simply because it's there and I haven't had the time to like experiment with other programs. I'm sure they're a lot more capable. I've watched Sam Nelson put together his match videos and the stuff he's using. Like he does the same thing as you, Derek. He screen records and then he rips the audio, and it just at a certain point it's just like just make it easy for people to share the things that they
Yeah.
find cool. That was the entire reason social media was created. However, I think we're beyond the golden era of it, and now it's so tightly controlled, and there's all these different services competing with each other. So this is just me being nostalgic about the early eras of the internet, you know. At
Yeah,
this point,
money.
Derek, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, money. Money's involved. So
Yeah,
they
yeah.
saw how much money it can make, and
Yep.
that's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the internet got all corporate, man. But at this point, we've talked about, sponsoring shooters, influencers, the social media space, a little bit of three gunning, gunsmithing, all this good stuff. Is there anything else you'd like to leave the listener with? The floor is yours.
Don't be a dick. Basically, don't be a
Solid and
dick.
roll.
Hey, can you
And
give me a
if you're gonna be an asshole, be a funny asshole.
Don't lie about your followers. Don't join a competitive shooting team for a product and then ditch the team a month later. We shouldn't have to spell these things out, but yeah, here we are. But Derek, we really enjoyed having you on, and I think we talked about a lot of great things. For our listeners, if you want to check out Phoenix Trinity's products, Matt is a sponsored shooter that didn't just run away with their product a month after joining their team. He enjoys their guns very, very much, and I know he has a one of their new grips on his gun as well. If you have any other questions for us, hit us up and we'll see you in the next one.